Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to a Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, the Mercy World, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Dr. Anne Pereira. Anne, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Dr. Anne Pereira is originally from Sri Lanka and has immigrated to New Zealand in 1981. She studied agriculture and food science and technology at universities in Sri Lanka, India, and the United States. She has many years of experience working in several countries around the world, has written and published some books and poetry, and today she works as food and nutrition consultant. And your biography is very impressive, and you've studied and worked in several countries. What made you immigrate to New Zealand?
Well, after studying, our first job opportunity that we accepted was in Brazil. When we were in Brazil, we were wondering, are we going to settle down in Brazil or immigrate to a place where the language was English.
So you and your husband?
My husband, and also we had a son who was born in Brazil. So that's what really motivated us to move to another country. We thought of Australia and to try to apply for a job. And the first response came from New Zealand. And that was in 1980, actually, when we started. And we haven't looked back, you know, this has been our home for the last so many years.
So you don't regret not having been accepted in Australia?
No. We didn't even apply, you know. Yeah. New Zealand came first and we are here.
Good.
From that time, yes.
And today you're working as a food and nutrition consultant.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what your role is?
Yeah, when I first came, I worked for food industry for most of the time. Vortis was one of the companies that I worked for as the R&D manager, and also Massey University and Crown Research Institute, Crop and Food at that time, now Plant and Food. And then all of a sudden I felt, you know, that I needed more time for myself to do other things. And Sri Lankan community was also growing. I felt maybe I could make a difference in their lives when they come to a new country, because I've been here for many more years at that time. So I wanted that flexibility. That's why I sort of went into becoming a consultant. Through the consultancy, I did work for food companies and sometimes even for individuals when they wanted some advice. And so that's the role as a food and nutrition consultant. And also that opened up an opportunity for me to go overseas and take up some voluntary work in Africa.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tingaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Dr. Anne Pereira. Anne is a food and nutrition consultant based in Auckland, and she's originally from Sri Lanka. And as you just said, you're working as a volunteer also. You've offered to share your knowledge on food and nutrition to the organization Volunteer Service Abroad, VSA.
VSA.
Why did you want to go abroad as a volunteer?
Well, I felt when I worked for about 40 years in my life, I felt that I've worked enough. Now I want to do other things. I was also writing some books. You know, I've written two nutrition books or co-authored. And my third book was more of a autobiography, which I wrote more like a tribute to a stepfather that I had. My own father passed away when I was 6 months old. So I had a stepfather for most of my life. It was originated through a dream, you know. In my dream, I told him, thank you for being my father. So I couldn't go and tell that in person. He passed away. So I went for the funeral, came back with a heavy heart and started writing. What got written was my life story. And the title is, Thank You for Being My Father.
So you could never tell him personally?
No, I couldn't tell, but I wrote to him as well as I went for his funeral. And the book is a tribute to what his contribution as a stepfather to me. But in my dream, I said, thank you for being my father. And I'm who I am today because of him.
And was he also involved in volunteering or in reaching out?
No, not really. He was doing a lot of charity work, but he was an accountant by profession and also architect, you know, as a side job. And he was a good man, although initially I didn't accept him as a stepfather. All I could think of was somebody taking my mother away from me. But it gradually turned out to be a beautiful relationship of a, you know, for me to tell him, thank you for being my father.
And so this was when you changed your life.
Yes.
And decided to concentrate on what made you who you were.
Yes.
And then you decided you go out for volunteer work abroad.
Having worked for many years, when my family responsibilities became less, you know, I just felt led to do something different. And both my husband and I, we've been thinking of doing some voluntary work in the area of food technology, nutrition. And right around the time when I had given my announcement of retirement to the boss, my husband brought this VSA website information. Tanzania is looking for a food technologist. We both expressed interest. My husband works at Auckland University, so he couldn't quite just leave. And so I decided to go, and he joined me during the university break and worked with me on the volunteer program. What I did in Tanzania. So Tanzania was the country that asked for a food technologist. It so happened that I was available, and it worked out perfectly well.
So how long did you stay?
2 years.
2 years?
2 years. It was a very interesting, very challenging situation, but very rewarding.
And can you tell us more about this work?
Yes. Well, you know, when I went there, they didn't have exactly, you know, where I was going to fit in. I went and I looked around and I, you know, saw certain opportunities. What my role was to, what is called capacity building for the people to develop their own little businesses. So I looked around and I saw a lot of fruits and vegetables going waste. So that was an area where I could, you know, preserve them. Preserve means not chemically, but a lot of sun drying available because solar power is very available very readily. And various other forms of converting the food that would otherwise go waste into food products which are nourishing and very valuable. Some food they didn't even know how to prepare. One example is a banana. Banana grows like a weed in Africa, you know, in at least Tanzania. Everywhere I went, you know, you see banana. They eat the ripe banana as a fruit and the green banana as a vegetable in different forms. Besides these two, you know, there's also the red flower that hangs at the end of the bunch that can be converted into a very nutritious and a delicious vegetable, which most of them didn't know. They were just throwing it out or feeding to the animals.
How do you prepare that?
Like a vegetable, I'll prepare it for you,
you just
one
cook
day.
It?
Yes. It's a traditional food in some Asian countries.
So the only way they preserved the bananas was to dry them?
No. They don't dry. Banana means, you know, normal bananas, they eat the ripe banana.
Yeah.
And the other green bananas, they cook into different forms, yeah. Which were really, I learned quite a lot of how to prepare the green bananas other than just cooking in one way.
But there are some Pacific countries, for example, where you have banana chips.
Yes.
Or bananas, dried bananas. Or in Vanuatu, I saw how they were preserving bananas for case of an emergency, and they digged a hole and they kept it in that hole. And they said it's good for 3 years. It does not taste good. It does not smell good, but it saves you from starving.
Starving, yes. I think there are a lot of native ways of preserving, and one of the methods that they preserve green bananas is to make it into a dry powder, which they then cook into a porridge. And stiff porridge called ugali was their main staple food. And they would eat that with some kind of a saucy thing with a little bit of meat if you can afford. Otherwise, it's a green leafy vegetable like amaranth leaves. Yeah. And so the banana blossom was very much a good accompaniment for this ugali, you know, the stiff porridge. And without telling them what it was, I prepared and served. And they said, what is this, you know? And then they got really hooked on to this. And through the word of mouth, you know, various church groups and various community groups wanted to learn more about it because it was available and they could taste it now and see how delicious it is. So that's one. And the green banana peel can also be cooked into a nice vegetable. Yes.
How did you know about that? Did you start in the studies?
No, or no, did you no. Test? My knowledge that I used when I was working in Africa was mainly from my childhood upbringing in Sri Lanka. Because in Sri Lanka, these are very common vegetables that we used to eat. And here when I went, when I saw the banana crop, I thought, ah, here's a place where I don't have to go hungry. You know, and I really was able to share with people some of the knowledge of my childhood. Food technology, you know, up to a postgraduate, what I studied were kind of high tech. I used that in teaching university and all that. But when I went to Africa, my main contribution was from my childhood experiences.
Did you have the impression that you opened new doors and new horizons?
Yes.
And maybe the people then thought, oh, we never thought of this.
That's
and then they would get more creative also in a different way.
Exactly. You know, now I was there through VSA for 2 years. Then UC Davis, California, was setting up a post-harvest training program. They saw what I did for that government organization that I went through VSA. They asked me whether I could come back and work with them. So I went and sort of did that with another group of people. And then, you know, just a couple of years ago, you know, 2015, a priest from conventual Franciscan friar from Tanzania came here for a holiday. Somebody mentioned about me and he met with me and he said, what did you do in Tanzania? When I explained to him, he said, oh, can you come and do that in our school? Because they have a missionary school there run mainly by, you know, conventual Franciscans who invite, you know, teachers and other people, mainly Polish community, you know, missionaries. And so I went there just last year and spent 3 months helping this community and churches, parishes, again doing the same, you know, banana. Plus, they also have another vegetable which I have been promoting also called drumstick, moringa. You know, it's becoming it's a very a nutritious product, again very common back in Sri Lanka and most of the Asian countries, but Africa, it's not known that well.
So what is it?
It's a tree with a pod which look like a drumstick, you know, so that's why it's called drumstick. And but the leaves are very, very nutritious. So what now they are doing is they are even selling the dried leaves to be put into capsules, and it's very common in Germany. You know, the one group from Germany came while I was there and was also interested in me joining with them. And I know that my friend who was growing this on an experimental basis is now trying to expand and do it in a commercial scale. So that's another thing. So what I taught them is how to utilize this in their own food. You know, when they are making various foods, they could put a little bit of the green leaves from moringa tree and increase the nutritional value. And
so in a way, you brought some of the Sri Lankan traditions to Africa.
Yes, well, true.
Were there also some things that you could pick up from Africa that you would bring to Sri Lanka?
Oh, yes, because, you know, their style of cooking is a little different from Sri Lankan. So it's an exchange of ideas.
So the diversity really helps to enrich everyone.
That's right. Diversity is strength.
And also, I think that you were working with Maasai.
Yes.
And I think Maasai are also nomads. So yes, they are not stable at one place.
No, they move from
So if they move steadily, then they might not know about certain processes whereas when you live at one place, you can grow a crop and you will harvest it. But if you move before harvest, or you depend on what is always available.
Available, yeah. A lot of these trees are growing like wild there. And and readily available, bananas and other things, yeah.
I always think it's a little, sometimes it's a disadvantage if you have something always available because you don't have stock. Whereas if you are in the northern hemisphere where you have winter and and summer and spring and autumn, then you know that during the summertime and the autumn, during autumn, you have to prepare so that you don't starve in winter.
That's right.
But if you don't really need to, because you always have the fruit trees, for example, then once a disaster happens, whatever, could be a storm or a flood or so, then you don't have anything, you're not prepared.
True, that's true to some extent. But most of the fruits, they have their own season, you know, seasonal fruits during the whole year. So in Tanzania, I noticed that there are different kinds of fruits growing year-round in different places. So there was a transport problem and availability. Bananas used to grow in one area very well, and then mangoes, pineapple, coconut, you know, all those things, and vegetables, onions, you know, sometimes they used to ask me, how do we preserve these onions so that we can share with the other areas where onions don't grow that well? So dehydration was a way of doing that, that I taught them.
And they had to go to a central marketplace then to exchange the food.
That's what they do, and small markets are available.
And today you work as an independent food nutrition consultant, and you said that you work a lot with the Sri Lankan community
also.
And can you tell us a little bit about your customers? Are they businesses, organizations, private people?
I have worked with a range of clients. Some of them are companies. They come and ask, you know, can you look at this particular project? Sometimes, you know, a few group of people or individuals, when they want to find out a little bit more. The work that I'm doing now is mostly voluntary. I also had an invitation from the National University of Singapore when somebody went on maternity leave. Can you come and teach nutrition while she's on leave? So it was really nice to go back, because I did spend some time in Singapore. After coming to New Zealand, there was an opportunity for us to work in Singapore. So my husband and I were based there. And so it kind of reconnected me with the community, and some of the students whom we taught are now lecturers. So it's one of them that went on maternity leave.
And in the volunteer work, when you're working with Sri Lankans, do you help them to cope with New Zealand conditions? Because when you tell me all about the possibilities and the beautiful fruit that you have in Sri Lanka, and then people come here to New Zealand and they have to go to the grocery shop if they don't have a house and an own garden, and they might not even know how to prepare certain produce that are very different to Sri Lankan.
Well, here it's not much of a problem, because most of the Sri Lankans who come here are familiar with the range of fruits and vegetables. So I haven't really done much of a voluntary work here, except helping people with English language and, you know, that kind of, and also if some people need some extra help, you know, to giving, providing that. But voluntary work in the sense, you know, where I provide more like a caring home if they've needed that. And the Sri Lankans here have got different organizations that help them, but I do get involved. I used to be more involved in the past than now.
And as a food and nutrition specialist, you'll certainly get frequently the question, can you recommend what to eat in order to have healthy food?
Yes, that's a very common thing. And sometimes when we go out to, you know, like a parties also, you know, that the topic comes and it becomes the conversation to some extent. Well, in general, you can tell people, you know, and most of the people know what is really important, but not that they really adhere to those kind of things. And also people have their own personal preferences. So if somebody asked me, you know, how can I improve my diet, what I do is, if they are serious, I tell them to keep a record of like 24-hour dietary record. Tell me, you know, what you normally eat over a week period of, you know, so that I get to know what their preferences are. And by that, you know, I can explain to them in a way that they will understand. And
so they know what is lacking.
That's right, yes.
No grains or whatever.
Yeah, depending on the food preferences, you can really tailor make to get the important nutrients, yeah.
In his encyclical Laudato Si, our Pope expresses his thoughts on ecological education and spirituality. So as a nutrition specialist, I was thinking, there is a chapter where he refers to the consumer's power of boycotting certain products, and he writes, when social pressure affects their earnings, businesses clearly have to find ways to produce differently. There are many people who are concerned about how food is produced, the quality, the long transport, and so on. Do you think that we should use the consumer's power more often?
Well, consumer's power can influence the marketing of food. There's a lot of food in the world, actually. If you look at the global production, there's a lot of food, and at the same time, there are a lot of people who go hungry. It's more of a distribution problem and then transport and logistics problems. If somebody could address that, you know, that'll be the best. Like, also how food is produced. Now, there's a lot of, you know, food additives and various things, synthetic food, you know, which really are more like the commercial side of the food. You know, a lot of food companies, they want to make money. And
well, that's part of the business.
It is business. I think that's what really have changed the world. You know, people who are producing, you know, they want to make it economically, and it's not ethical sometimes.
But it's also difficult for the consumer if he or she doesn't know what is in the product.
That's right, yes. I think that education is part of something that I can help people with. Even to read the label, you know, and to understand what is in this food. Do I really want to take this versus, you know, to compare? Can I prepare from fresh, you know, something that is put into a bag or a can, you know? Something like that would be the contribution that I can make according to Pope's message. Yeah. Mm.
And I think that would be a really important step when people are struggling with reading the labels, because there are more and more labels on food products. Mm. But if you don't understand it, it's like a different language.
Country of origin is also becoming very important, because that way you will know this is produced in New Zealand, and, you know, it's quite safe because New Zealand has got regulations which safeguard the food products. I have worked in various food industries, and my last job was compliance manager, business development and compliance manager for Fresh Direct. And so the growers have to follow strict regulations on what they can add and when they can add, because otherwise, you know, they can't sell it through supermarkets.
Can you give us one example?
Like, say, for example, spring onions, let's say, you know. It's not a big crop, but it's a commonly used thing. So if it is grown, you know, there are certain chemicals that can be added to make sure that there are no insects or pests. But they have to stop at a certain time before harvest so that, you know, there are no residues. And there are certain category which is called organically grown. You know, in that case, you don't apply any chemicals. But still, government, there's a horticulture association, they take regular samples, you know, not all the samples, but, you know, randomly selected samples and get them analyzed. So most of the farmers who grow the crops get these reports to make sure that what they apply is what is on the product. So that kind of regulations safeguard the New Zealand consumer. Most of the developed countries have got, some other countries, you know, may not have these stringent regulatory. So when you look at a label and see how this came from such and such country, you can develop a confidence level about the safety.
But then again, there are some fruit that don't grow in New Zealand.
True, that's right. And New Zealand government is quite strict about importing as well, because in order to import from certain countries, they have to have certain phytosanitary conditions met, and they either do the inspection here or over in the country of origin, and you know, give permission to bring.
So they do some samples.
Oh, yes, they are quite, you know.
So I think that what the Pope wants us is to be more aware that we are part of a whole creation.
That's right.
And that's why he calls it ecological education and spirituality.
Yes,
you cannot divide the two.
No, I think there's body, soul and spirit, like the holistic aspect of anything. Healing, food, you know, everything is like that. And also something that the Holy Father has been promoting is zero hunger, you know. And I think that is not an impossible thing.
Yes, there's apparently enough food. It's well distributed.
Yes. When I have lived in seven countries, when I go through, you know, all what I have experienced, plenty of food, it's a distribution problem.
Yes. So we'll stay alert. We stay aware,
yes,
and we do our best to continue creating awareness about what's happening, how we can reduce certain dangers.
Mm. Yes, agreed.
Thank you very much,
Dr.
Thank you very much, Anne.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I hope to see you at our spirituality center. We have always homemade food. You will like it.
Yes, right.
And what is coming up in our spirituality center? Well, we have the Lenten series continuing, pondering St. John's Gospel, facilitated by Father Stuart Zeller, on Tuesday, the 28th of March, and on the 4th of April will be this, the third and the fourth session. Each time it's from 10 o'clock to noon. Please let us know if you're interested in coming. On Saturday, the 25th of March, from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., Margaret Bowater will facilitate a dream workshop on resolving nightmares. On the 22nd and the 29th of March, from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard is going to facilitate an introductory workshop to Christian meditation. If you're not experienced in meditation and you'd like to know more about Christian meditation, please come along. The two workshops are free of charge. And then we have our Writer's Weekend workshop, which was postponed to Friday the 7th of April to Sunday the 9th of April. Facilitator is Joan Rosier Jones. And for all our events at the center, please register with us per phone at 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I wish you all a good Friday and a great week ahead. And thank you very much, Anne, for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.